You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Florida or Hawaii might seem like perfect getaways during Wisconsin winters, but our guest says it's also a good time for international destinations, and there could be some good deals out there. Maybe Christmas in Prague? We'll have some ideas coming up. Right now, it's time for a weekly Wisconsin News Roundup. First, five football players at UW-Eau Claire have been suspended from the team after making racist posts on the social media platform Snapchat. Liz Domes is a WPR digital content manager. She reported on this story. Liz, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Rob.
Can you tell us about the Snapchat post and thread that led to these suspensions?
Yes. So on Tuesday, a screenshot of a conversation that occurred allegedly between members of the UW-Eau Claire football team and a private chat on Snapchat began circulating. And in that conversation, one of the users referenced the BME, and that stands for the Black Male Empowerment, which is a campus organization, and then said that a non-existent WME is meeting that evening. The speculation is that WME stands for White Male Empowerment. That's not actually an organization that exists on campus. But that speculation is because this post was paired with an image of a burning cross and Klansmen in the background. Other users kind of fed into that conversation with, you know, more racial remarks. One said, I'll be there, but I'll be like 5 minutes late. Think the cross will still be burning. Don't want to miss that again. Just more comments from there.
What's been the response now from UW-Eau Claire administration?
Yeah, so I spoke with Chancellor Jim Schmidt, and he actually issued a memo on Thursday. He began by calling it a dark time for the university. He condemned the posts, and then within that memo, he mentioned a few plans of action. He said that he had heard from students on, you know, every channel, email, calls, meeting with students in person on social media. People were decrying this, and some are calling for expulsion of these students. Basically, what's happened so far is that the athletic department has suspended these five players from the team. What's going to happen is, well, actually, an investigation is already ongoing from the dean of students' office to investigate this. He has actually asked that all unsupervised social media groups that are involving athletic teams be suspended. Schmidt says that he expects that an update on the progress of the investigation will be made before the Thanksgiving break. He doesn't expect an investigation to take that long, but at this point, it's underway.
And what are you watching for next as we wrap up, Liz?
Yeah, I think because the students' names are revealed in the Snapchat conversation, I think that an investigation, the chancellor said, likely to conclude soon. It's really unclear at this point what's going to happen, what kind of disciplinary action is going to result, you know, whether it's going to be expulsion, suspension. We're keeping a close eye on it.
Liz, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
Liz Domes is a WPR digital content manager. She talked with us about a racist social media post involving UW-Eau Claire students. Now, the Sun Prairie City Council approved a plan this Tuesday to offer childcare for parents attending public meetings in the city. It's scheduled to take effect in the new year. Rob Menser is WPR's rural communities reporter. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Rob.
We'll talk about this idea. What was the motivation for this childcare at public meetings idea?
So it really is about making it easier to get involved with local government. So there are about 300 public meetings in Sun Prairie in the course of a year, because it's not just like city council meetings, but it's also citizens commissions or boards or city committees. And so the idea is to make it an option if you want to serve on one of those citizens boards, or if you just want to come to a public meeting and speak your piece, to make it an option that if you're a young parent, you can bring your kid and not have to make special arrangements for that.
Is this something we're seeing in other communities around the state that you've run across?
Well, there's definitely a sense that there are other communities there are strong advocates for it in other communities. There's been discussion of the idea in Madison and in Dane County around their public meetings, and there are other places, but all over the state where there are people who encounter this issue and see, you know, or just advocates of sort of civic participation see this as a barrier for young parents and want to get people involved in city government.
What do we know about what this would cost to do something like this in the case of Sun Prairie, for example?
So Sun Prairie, they're looking at hiring 2 childcare workers for these meetings throughout the year. And their estimate is that it would cost up to $23,000 for that city. And it was voted on. They voted it in. It's going to happen as part of their 2020 budget this week. So that increase accounts for a city council member I talked to said it's a little less than $2 of a total tax increase that the new budget will include.
You also got a perspective from a former member of the Marathon County Board, who's also, I understand, a mother herself. What did she have to say about balancing representing and parenting?
Right. This was someone, Ashley Lang, who was a young member of the Marathon County Board. She was 34 years old, and she had a 3-year-old daughter, and she's a single mom. And so she is a strong advocate for this sort of policy. She talked about having to take her daughter, drive her daughter out to her parents' house out in Athens, which is about a half an hour away. She'd have to drive out to Athens, drop her daughter off, come back in for the county board meeting, and then go back to her parents' house after that. And like it just shows the obstacles, right? I mean, that's to be engaged in your community. That's a whole lot of extra work for somebody who's a parent, and let alone a single mom.
Let's turn to another story you covered, Rob. Yesterday morning, officials from a few different county sheriff's departments put Rhinelander's City Hall on lockdown. What happened there?
Right. So we learned today from the reporting of our friends at WXPR Public Radio that they were serving a search warrant against the Rhinelander City Administrator, Daniel Guild. Guild has been with Rhinelander for about a year, and there have been several controversies that he's been involved with in that role. And so yesterday, officials from the Oneida County Sheriff's Department and a couple of other neighboring sheriff's department, as well as the state Department of Justice, locked down City Hall and served search warrants on in an investigation into tampering with public records and misconduct in public office, both of which are felonies. And then the news today is that specifically the investigation is into Guild.
This isn't something we see every day, a city hall being locked down by various law enforcement agencies. What do we know about what happens next in a case like this?
Well, always important to say no arrests have been made, right? No, there are no formal charges here. I spoke with Oneida County Chief Deputy Dan Hess yesterday, and he said that this is the result of this action itself is a result of a months-long investigation involving several different sheriff's departments. And now they seized a bunch of paper documents and also a bunch of electronic evidence. So now they're going to analyze that evidence and determine from there with the district attorney's office whether there will be charges forthcoming.
And finally, Rob, the Wisconsin DNR is giving hunters a green light to watch out for a different mammal than the deer they're usually looking for, feral pigs. What is the DNR telling deer hunters?
The DNR says if you see a feral pig while you are hunting, shoot it. So Wisconsin doesn't have a confirmed free-ranging feral pig population anymore, but it has in the past. As in the early 2000s, there was a herd of some 130 feral pigs in the southwestern part of the state, and they can do serious damage, especially to like croplands, but also to like property. They can be a huge nuisance. And so Wisconsin's Wisconsin's law is there's no bag limit. There's no special license required as if you have a small game license. And so the message that the DNR put out was just if there are any still out there and deer hunters happen to see any, they should not be shy.
Now, there was a kind of a viral online running joke about feral pigs for a while, but these are a big deal in some states. As you say, not currently Wisconsin, but states that don't have feral pigs really don't want them to get a foothold, right?
No, it's absolutely wild. So just this year, the U.S. Department of Agriculture launched an eradication program that is $75 million, this extensive eradication program in multiple states. The government estimates that the damage that these creatures do is about $2 billion per year. This is like they're especially sort of prevalent in Texas and in a lot of like the southeastern United States, mm-hmm. Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas. There's a ton. So where they exist, they spread fast and they're extremely destructive.
Rob, thanks for sharing your trifecta of stories with us this week.
Thank you.
That's Rob Mentzer, WPR Rural Communities reporter. He talked with us about a few stories he's been covering, from Sun Prairie to Rhinelander to the DNR. He finished off our weekly Wisconsin News Roundup. After a handful of wintry blasts already this season, you might be thinking about making plans to get out of Wisconsin for a little while. Sure, you can head someplace warm in your travels, the Hawaiis, Floridas, Mexicos, but our guest says you might want to embrace other snowy, chilly destinations outside the United States and maybe pick up a good deal along the way. He also says some people are thinking about less desirable places like sites of famous natural disasters. Peter Greenberg is the travel editor for CBS News. He's also the producer and co-host of the public television series The Royal Tour. He's a graduate of UW-Madison. Peter, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be with you.
Well, you're joining us from a different time zone. I understand you're in Saudi Arabia right now. What's going on there?
Well, in Saudi Arabia, believe it or not, for the first time in the 89-year history of the kingdom, they've opened the doors. They are now granting visas to citizens of more than 49 countries. This has been a closed country for literally 89 years. So it's a brave new world here right now. This month alone, they've just granted the last week 55,000 visas, a great pent-up demand of people who want to come here to see a place that no one really has ever seen unless you're a religious pilgrim going to Mecca.
In your blog, you cited a recent survey from Wallet Hub showing that 1 in 3 Americans are not planning on traveling this winter to Saudi Arabia or anywhere. And the biggest reason they cite is cost. But you say for airfare, it's actually getting cheaper. Talk about that.
It is. Airfares are down across the board about 5 to 6% over this period of time last year. And that's caused by about three different factors. One, believe it or not, overseas, but still confusion about Brexit. A lot of people aren't traveling within Europe. Second of all, which is great benefit for U.S. travelers, the power of the U.S. dollar overseas against not just the British pound and the euro, but about 12 different foreign currencies where our buying power just went up a multiple time. And then the third thing, another reason why people are not coming to the U.S., is the perception of the Trump administration's immigration policy. So you take those three things together, and it creates a perfect storm as a buyer's market for travelers, not just domestically, but especially overseas. And if you do comparison faring, you'll find that many destinations around the world are cheaper to get to than between Madison and San Francisco.
You also say if we do some careful shopping, we might be able to save money by buying a one-way ticket and then another one-way ticket. How does that work?
Well, you can thank JetBlue and Southwest Airlines for that. We all remember the time when you could only get a discount ticket if you booked a week in advance or 2 weeks in advance and stayed over that dreaded Saturday night. That was really designed to disrupt any kind of business travelers from getting a bargain who only wanted to travel midweek. However, when Southwest Airlines and JetBlue started introducing one-way fares, the other airlines had to match them. And in many routes, buying an individual one-way fare for each one of your trips is often a much better and economical way to go.
One pratfall I've heard about is if you do that, if you shop around and do that from two different airlines, you have to be really careful checking the luggage and baggage check guidelines.
Well, remember, here's the thing. The airlines used to have much better interline arrangements where if you checked the bag on American and connected in Chicago with United, your bag would still show up in New York. But we're talking about point-to-point travel now. So if you're just doing a one-way trip from New York to Chicago or Chicago to L.A., it doesn't matter because the bag's only going in one direction. You're going to pick it up anyway. It only kicks in if you're connecting flights. So if you're going to try to buy two different one-way tickets on a flight that would normally just connect, that may not be the way to go. I'm talking about just one point-to-point trip that you would normally buy round trip versus what you just suggested.
Talking to Peter Greenberg, travel editor for CBS News. He's got a variety of travel advice for us for the season and beyond. You wrote about a travel idea. I didn't know this was a thing, Peter. Dark tourism. Instead of going to a fun-filled place, we go to some place where maybe a tragedy happened, a dark moment in human history. Why are people wanting to tour that kind of site?
Well, curiosity for one, a sense of history and context for another. And it's not just where tragedy occurred in terms of a conflict. It's also where maybe a natural disaster has occurred where you can actually go and participate in helping out. So this ranges from Chernobyl, which will immediately come to mind, to the Bahamas, which just suffered under Hurricane Dorian. And what people don't realize is that when you have a natural disaster like we saw in the Caribbean with Dorian, you have countries there that depend almost entirely on their economy being driven by travel and tourism. And if they don't have that, they don't have an economy. And if you take a look at the Bahamas, you're dealing with a couple of hundred islands, only three or four of which were adversely affected. But the perception by most travelers is, oh, the Bahamas is dead. It's not. You go to Nassau today, and you're helping them out, and you're going to have a great time in the process.
I see that with the Bahamas as a kind of a natural tourist destination anyway. But what about something like Chernobyl, which I don't think was ever at the top of people's travel lists? Why are people going to a place like that for a tour?
Because they want to see where history happened. Now, they're not necessarily doing tours that I'm aware of to Fukushima in Japan right away because of three words, nuclear half-life. But I would suggest that if you take a look at where wars were fought, if you take a look at where those kind of terrible disasters happen, people want to be able to go look at it. Not because they're just curious and they want to be looky-loos, but they want to be able to put their own lives in context to see what other people went through, maybe to learn some lessons about what not to do in their current situation.
On a happier note, you recommend a stop for anybody traveling just about anywhere, the local library. Why is that?
I'm a huge fan of that. There are two places that I like to stop anytime I travel and I have some time. The very first place I stop might surprise you. It's the local fire station. You know why? Because the firefighters have been in every hotel. They've been in every they've been in every restaurant. They've been in every library, to mention that. And they know where to go, and they know where not to go. Now, having said that, that brings me up to the subject of libraries. Who knows better about a city than the people who read about it and the people who read in general? And the people who work at libraries are the best sources of information next to firefighters I can imagine. Plus, even though, you know, we all go with the traditional idea that you have to be quiet in a library, they actually like to have a conversation, and you can learn a lot.
We asked our listeners on the Ideas Network Facebook page where they like to travel. We heard from Vicky. Vicky says Prague is a wonderful place to go. Great restaurants, shops, the clock, and the square always has something going on. Prague, Peter?
I totally agree. You know, when you take a look at what got destroyed in World War II, Prague was not one of them. It was not bombed, and it was not destroyed, and much of the architecture, if not all of it, has been wonderfully preserved, and she's absolutely right.
And Sandy says the Rio Grande Valley, Texas, that is Sandy's plan this winter, so a warmer place in the winter. That sounds good after an early winter here in Wisconsin, Peter.
Actually, that's true, although the Rio Grande Valley in Texas in the winter does get cold at night. Don't kid yourself.
Okay, good to know. Now, Peter, whether we're traveling, you know, just to one town over or around the world, can you give us some tips on a good traveler mindset to really get the most out of our vacation, big or small?
Yes. Number one, nobody told you to pack every pair of shoes you've ever owned. this is not the time to overpack. And I'm not talking about just avoiding excess baggage charges. You don't want to schlep. You want to minimize it, but you want to pack an extra bag that's inside your bag in case you want to bring something back. That's number one. Number two, and this is even the most important mantra, is never take a no from somebody who's not empowered to give you a yes in the first place. The travel industry sadly is set up these days to only tell you no, to limit your options. And the very first person you get on the phone usually can only tell you no. And your job, if you choose to accept it as a Mission Impossible deal, is to find the supervisor, have a nice conversation with them, because they're the ones who are empowered to give you a yes. Now, if they tell you no, it's no. But my experience has always dictated to me that if you're nice and you're not adversarial, and you explain your problem, they will participate with you in the solution because they do have the power to say yes.
Peter, as we wrap up, what is your next travel destination?
I'm actually flying tomorrow on one of the more ridiculous flight connections you can imagine. I'm flying from Riyadh in Saudi Arabia to Bogota in Colombia.
Wow.
Good luck.
That's a pretty long flight. And what's on your itinerary in Colombia?
Well, as you may know, and we've talked about this before on the station, I do a series of shows on PBS called The Royal Tour, where I go to individual heads of state, kings, presidents, or prime ministers, and I actually get them to give me the impossible. 6 days of their schedule, completely free. And then my camera crew comes in, and they become my tour guide to the country. No holds barred. Think two guys on a road trip, just one of them happens to run the country. We've done it with everybody from the King of Jordan to Netanyahu to the President of Mexico, the Prime Minister of New Zealand. The most recent one that's on the air right now on public television is the Royal Tour of Poland with the Prime Minister. And I'm going down to have a meeting with the President of Colombia, who wants to do one, and we want to do one with him.
Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You got it. Anytime.
Peter Greenberg is travel editor for CBS News and the producer and co-host of the public TV series The Royal Tour. We talked to him about international travel ideas during the winter months and some dark tourism destinations to consider. You can get more travel advice at his website. It's petergreenberg.com. And by the way, next Tuesday, we're going to talk about a related topic, etiquette for travelers on that crowded airplane, bus, train, you name it. Car with your family if you want. We'll look at advice for travelers to have harmonious relationships with one another. 2020 Grammy nominees were released this week. There's a whole slate of new artists getting recognized. Lizzo and Lil Nas X were two of the most nominated, and some music industry watchers are saying there's a new generation of stars breaking through. Alexander Shashko is a lecturer in the Department of Afro-American Studies at UW-Madison. Alexander, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
Well, is there a youth movement, a new generation popping up in this year's Grammy crop?
I think so. You know, the Grammys have a reputation for not embracing younger artists, to put it mildly. It has a long history of snubbing younger artists in favor of veteran artists, and at least for now, it seems that they got the message, and I think they had to get the message because, like most other awards programs, they have been bleeding in terms of their ratings and in terms of the attention they get in a media-saturated environment that we live in. They don't get nearly they don't have nearly the kind of cachet that they had in the past, so they have no choice really but to adjust, and they've done that by picking a lot of younger artists in the major categories this year.
If I can ask this in a public radio kind of way, do award shows like the Grammys still matter?
I think that they do in the sense that they become a focal point for talking about music and about the music industry. They are by no means, you know, the most important way in which we should judge music. Mm-hmm. Certainly that comes down to your own personal experience with it. It comes down to the communal experience and shared experience that we have listening to it as a society or a given community. You know, the creative output and the quality of that output, these are all things that, of course, matter a lot and ultimately matter more. But something like the Grammys provides a big opportunity to talk about these artists and to think about the state of pop music at any given time. And in that sense, I think they do still matter, although I don't necessarily think that means that it's the cutting edge of what matters.
Well, let's give a listen to one of those artists who did break through this year and in the Grammys. Lizzo, nominated for 8 Grammys in a lot of major categories. Here's a little bit of her song, 'Cause I Love You. So Lizzo there, this is one where Grammys, I think, match up with reality in terms of pop music listening.
She is an ascendant artist. You know, she played in Wisconsin twice over the past year, and she was just here in Madison a few weeks ago, and the show was bonkers. I mean, the audience was absolutely enthralled and singing every note from start to finish. She is clearly an artist who has captured something of the moment, a sense of liberation, a sense of assertion and positivity at a time, frankly, in American society when a lot of those things are in short supply elsewhere. And so I think she's tapped into that in a profound way, and it has led to a lot of popularity and a lot of success.
Well, by my count, a third of the people in this room were dancing heavily along with that. Board operator Sarah Hopeful was at one of those concerts, actually.
Good.
A lot of people very excited about Lizzo. And we talked last time you were on, we talked about kind of a Year of the Woman sort of idea in our pop music. Do you see that going on as reflected maybe in these awards?
Absolutely. In the main categories, that is the case. When you look at the main categories and who are the favorites to win, which of course it's the Grammys, it doesn't necessarily mean that's what will happen. But when you look at the list of artists, so many of them are women and women who have had albums, singles, careers that are both commercially very successful and very critically acclaimed, that it's not just a question of whether or not they're selling records, but also that they are considered artists to be reckoned with creatively as well.
Well, let's listen to one of them, Billie Eilish, six nominations in this year's Grammy nomination list. Here's her song, Bad Guy. So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy, just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy. Duh. Billie Eilish there. This is a name I haven't dug super deep into her music, but this is a name it's hard to avoid seeing all over the place lately.
She has had quite a year as well. In fact, I consider myself lucky if I see a show as exciting as that Lizzo show was every two or three years. I saw two this year because I also saw Billie Eilish perform at Summerfest, and I don't think she needed to sing a note because the entire audience knew every word to every song. It was one of those moments when you realize just how deeply an artist has penetrated into the public culture. She has really found a way to integrate elements of hip-hop, particularly in the rhythms of her music and dance music, along with a sort of emo alternative sensibility. But then these are pop songs at the end of the day. She's really writing very melodic records. And that combination in this particular way that she's done it has proven very, very successful and interesting.
All right, crazy random made-up observation here. It seems like with these two and some other artists lately, there's a personal connection between the fans and the artists that I don't feel like we always see in pop music. Is there something to that?
I think that's probably true. I think that representation counts for a lot in popular music. And when an artist comes along who a group of people feel represents them in some way, they often feel a deep connection to them. And I think that's the case with Lizzo and Billie Eilish, that they're both artists who are speaking for audiences, for young women in particular, who may not entirely feel like their voices are being heard elsewhere in American society right now. And as a result of that, the artists have a kind of importance then to the audience. And I do think that that's the case with both of them.
Talking about this year's round of Grammy nominations just out this week, Alexander Shashko with us from UW-Madison. Let's check out another artist who really broke big over the last year or so, Lil Nas X. This one is with the Billy Ray Cyrus version of the song Old Town Road. Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I got the horses in the back. All right, six nominations for Lil Nas X, Billy Ray Cyrus on this version here. There were a couple different ones. And this, we talked about this a little before. Is it country? Nashville sort of recognizes it. The Grammys, he's got six nominations. I don't think country music is among them.
No, it's not. And so the crazy conversation about Lil Nas X continues because here he is being celebrated in the major pop categories, but basically being moved out of the country categories here as well. That may be a function of what happened before, in the sense that because the song wasn't really played on country radio and wasn't really embraced by the country music industry, that it wasn't going to show up in those country categories. You have to remember that once you get past the major categories, the people who vote in the smaller categories are a subset of all of the Grammy voters, even for the nominations. So it's a different group of people choosing them, and that's undoubtedly part of the reason why that's the case.
Another note on that, Lil Nas X is up for Best Album, I think, and there were some albums that were what we think of as albums, and then some Best Albums, I'm throwing quotes up, were EPs.
So it's a very interesting situation. You know, in the digital age, what an album means has shifted and changed. An EP is more commonly released now than it used to be because an artist can very easily go into the studio, produce five songs that they really like, put them out to an audience. They don't have to wait to put out a 13-song album. The flip side of that is we now see albums that are sometimes 30 tracks long for the same reason. They're not bounded by any kind of physical media. And so, yeah, we have a couple song albums. The Her album, which is a combination of two EPs, and then Lil Nas X's, which is itself just an EP, I think five songs. And so I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that shifting definition of what an album can be. Whether or not a five-song EP has the heft and the importance to be nominated alongside fuller albums, that's another question I think that we're going to be working out. I mean, the Lil Nas X song is incredible. The Lil Nas X EP, we'll see.
It has that one song on it.
It does.
Plus other stuff.
Yes.
You mentioned Her, spelled out H.E.R., pronounced Her. Five nominations for Her. Here's the song Hard Place.
Wanna believe what you say, but I hate you on most days. You've been testing my faith, my patience, yeah. And you know that I be headstrong, but you know that you be dead wrong. Telling me to relax when I'm reacting. But I'd rather fight.
All right, I let that one play a little longer until it hit that sweet chord change that I really like. Talk about Her.
You know, I think what really elevates Her music above sort of the standard R&B song or album is just the melodicism of it. I think that there's so much emphasis on creating a groove and creating a sensibility in modern pop music. And it's something that a lot of artists spend a lot of time on because they can do it themselves in a way they couldn't before through Pro Tools and other technology. That sometimes the melody gets lost in the shuffle there a little bit, and I think that it's not in Her case. And I think that that is part of what has made her not just successful, but also someone who the Grammys like. Because they, you know, at the end of the day, the Grammy still wants to go back to basically a well-crafted pop song. That's what they want, and a well-crafted melody. And she offers that.
Talking to Alexander Shashko from UW-Madison about the 2020 Grammys. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did your favorite artist get nominated this year? Were they left off? And do you keep up with new music of whatever your genre of choice is? Where do you go to find new stuff? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with Alexander Shashko from UW-Madison looking at this year's Grammy nominees. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Who are you excited to see nominated for Grammys this year? Have you been listening to some of the nominees? Do you check out music based on who gets a Grammy or a Grammy nomination? And if you keep up with new music in any particular genre, how do you do it? Where do you keep up with it now? Is it on the radio, streaming, what your friends tell you about? You name it. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go right to your calls. Martha is with us in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Hey, how are you? This is a great show. I love it.
Thanks. What did you want to bring up, Martha?
Yeah, I'm looking at my guy here for Best Country Solo Performance. This guy, Tyler Childers, he's got a song called All Urine. It's up for the award. He's up against like Willie Nelson and Blake Shelton and Tanya Tucker. And this is a kid from coal country in Kentucky who, you know, started just not many years ago, playing open mics and, you know, farmers markets. I got to meet him in Nashville a couple years ago, and then he was at Blue Ox Festival over here in Eau Claire. Great guy, salt of the earth, honest, young, wonderful young man, incredible song. Like, this is like the next Kris Kristofferson,
wow,
this guy.
Martha, I could tell you're rooting for him. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's some stiff competition, though, Willie Nelson's, Tanya Tucker's, and so on.
It's a great song. He's a really interesting artist. I think he actually is heading to Madison soon as well. And it would be a worthy victor. But as you said, that's pretty stiff competition. Tanya Tucker is having an incredible year for herself, put out a fantastic album, is getting a lot of career recognition at the moment. And I would be surprised if she didn't win one of those in the country category, because she's even nominated, I think, in Song of the Year, and that where she's less likely to win, but country would be where she'd more likely win. But, you know, I wouldn't complain if that song won the award.
Thanks for that call. We don't have Tyler Childress queued up, but we do have some Tanya Tucker. Here's the song, Bring My Flowers Home Now.
Bring my flowers now while I'm living. I won't need your love when I'm gone. Go spend time, tears, and money on my own breathless body. If your heart is in them flowers, bring them home.
Well, I guess she still got it, huh?
Absolutely. You know, she had kind of been in retirement in a way for a long time, and apparently was reluctant to even go into the studio and do this album. And a lot of people stepped up, Brandi Carlile and others, to go and work with her. And the result was one of these albums that we get, you know, once or twice a year, you know, by a veteran artist who is looking for a way to sort of make a statement that sums up their career and revives their career at the same time. And that's absolutely what she did with that record.
And Martha reminded me, and you seeing the concerts reminded me, a lot of these artists, people are going and seeing them live. We hear every now and then, okay, well, is this the end for live music? Is this not a thing? We just want to sit at home, listen on our computers or whatever. There's still some people are doing pretty well touring.
Absolutely. In fact, for most artists now, touring is more important than ever, because the amount of money that they make from streaming is really just a fraction of what they used to make from physical album sales, and less than they made with downloading. So because of that, the way in which you make a living is to make your money elsewhere, and touring is one of those places. And at the same time, one thing we've noticed, not just in the music industry, but everywhere in the entertainment industry, is that increasingly we see Americans who want to spend some of their disposable income on having experiences instead of buying more things. And concerts are one of those ways that you can do that. You go to a show, you have an experience, you enjoy seeing an artist perform in person, and you don't have to find somewhere to put it when you get home.
Alexander Shashko is with us from UW-Madison. We're looking at the Grammy nominees this year. Still time for you to join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or your questions about the artists. We've got some audio from here. Rosalia with the song Mal Amente, two nominations, including Best New Artist. So an artist from Spain there nominated in the Best New Artist category. How did international acts do otherwise this year in the Grammys?
Well, it's a matter of perspective, I suppose, given the fact that the Grammys has historically been so focused on English-speaking artists, particularly from the United States, Canada, and from Great Britain. It's not very common to even have an artist from Spain singing in Spanish as Best New Artist. So in that sense, there's a level of connection there in terms of the global music community. But a reckoning is coming for the Grammys, because as the music industry becomes more global and as it becomes easier for music fans to hear music from all over the world, the boundaries are going to disappear. And of course, that makes it difficult to vote. it just becomes very difficult. As more and more music exists out there in the world, the voters are only going to know so much. And so there's a kind of tension between what the voters know and what the fans are listening to that may take some time to figure out. But clearly there is something of an inclusion, whether it's as much as it probably should be relative to what's popular commercially, especially Latin music, the gap is still significant there.
And that could be a hard-nosed financial issue. I mean, we see movie makers thinking, how's this going to sell in Asia?
Absolutely.
The music industry might have to follow suit.
Yeah, I mean, the best example sort of the gap here is BTS, which are the biggest group in the world at the moment, and really were totally ignored by the Grammys. They don't know how to handle the music, the language barrier. They haven't figured out where it fits, and so that's something that they will have to sort out eventually.
Another trend maybe people have pointed out, what had been a trend, a lot of rap albums making it into the major general categories. What happened this year?
Well, that did not happen for the most part this year. And typically what has happened is that, with a few exceptions, the big rap albums every year make it into the major categories as nominations. They don't typically win, but they are at least there in the mix a little bit. I think this year it was in part because you had this handful of overwhelming releases on the pop side, the Ariana Grande album, Billie Eilish, Lizzo, that really took a lot of that space. I think it's also that there's a bit of let's put it this way. I don't think most of the hip-hop albums that came out this year had tremendous crossover appeal, especially lyrically. And as a result of that, I don't think it found its – I don't think they found their way into a lot of the Grammy nomination voters, the people who make those decisions.
Just a couple minutes left. Anything else that struck you as you look through the list of nominees?
Well, you know, as always in this kind of situation, you start looking at who didn't get nominated and who might have been nominated. Certainly Maren Morris, who won a lot of awards at the Country Music Awards for her album, did not even get nominated for Country Album of the Year, let alone Album of the Year, which many people thought that she would receive. Taylor Swift only received one nomination in a major category. I'm not totally surprised by that. I think the last two albums, she's lost the narrative a little bit in terms of the connection between her and her audience, the story she was telling so well for so long. And so I'm not totally shocked by that. I am a little surprised that Bruce Springsteen received no nominations at all for Western Skies, which is a beautiful, beautiful album. But I think once it didn't make it into the major categories, there was no home for it. It's not country enough for country. It's not rock enough for rock. And so it just kind of got lost in the shuffle.
We'll leave it there for now and watch to see who wins. Alexander, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
That was Alexander Shashko, lecturer in the Department of Afro-American Studies at UW-Madison. He joined us today to talk about the 2020 Grammy nominations out this week. Still time for you to share your favorites. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Coming up Monday on Central Time, from citizenship to voting rights, U.S. politics today were shaped by constitutional amendments at the end of the Civil War. A historian tells us why we experienced a second founding of the United States. And we'll meet a fashion designer with a unique challenge, creating compelling outfits for a customer who's less than 1 foot tall. Meet the creator of some of Barbie's most famous outfits over the decades. That, plus a look at some of the top news stories of the day, it's coming up Monday here on Central Time.